I'm now in section 4 of my notes for Psalm 18, and I've entitled this, For Thou Hast Girded Me with Strength Under the Battle. We've come to a point in our outline where I'd like to start focusing in on the battle ahead of us. And to acclimate ourselves to this subject, I would first like to explore what the Lord effectually did for David. There in our outline, if you don't have our notes, but you have the outline, this would be Psalms 18, verses 16 through 20, and verses 39 through 42, those sections where we classified them as what the Lord is effectually doing for David. Verse 16, He sent from above. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. He pulled me out of many waters, waters meaning water or juice typically, or a flood or a spring typically. But if used as a euphemism, it's describing urine or semen or wasting. We'll sum these things up here when we get through a bit of them. The 17th saying, He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, and for they were too strong for me. Delivered means snatched. It's a picture of being snatched me from my strong, which is a harsh or fierce enemy, a hating adversary. And from them which hated me, that means hate me personally. It's not just hating me for the cause or what I stand for, but hating me personally. For they were too strong. Strong there, meaning alert, strong there, meaning alert on foot or alert in courage for me. Now in 18, they prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. Prevented means to project or to precede or to anticipate. It's almost like predicting what someone's going to do, to anticipate it. And this is the saint that they're anticipating his moves in the day of my calamity. A calamity meaning a bending down or oppression. They're oppressing me and they're predicting or anticipating anything that I would do to try to get out from under this. Verse 19, He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Let's break that down a little bit. That large place, it means an enlargement, but it's more almost a picture of an open space. He's brought me to an open space. He's brought me to a clearing, you know. From out of the forest, he's brought me to a spot where, you know, there's a clearing. He delivered, which means to pull off. And by implication, that means to deliver. With the intent of equipping for a fight, to present or to strengthen or to arm. So there we are out in this open space. He's brought us to this open space in that we can, you know, see the battle, you know, from a clearer vantage point, and so that we could be armed for that. Because he delighted or he inclined in me. Verse 20, the Lord rewarded me. Now, we've talked about this verse before. We did the last half of this verse, talking about righteousness meaning just cause, cleanliness meaning purity of my hands, hands meaning the open power, a symbol of a power or direction, and that he had recompensed me, he'd turned me back. But I wanted to go back through this one more time to go through reward, because reward means treat well. It still doesn't mean that God owed us something and that we're being, you know, paid back for it. It means he treated us well. That's all it means. All right, so now we'll collect all these, the verses we've just gone through and some of the further picture or symbolism and the language that we brought out through that. We're going to collect that into some notes that I've made here. What the Lord from above is seen doing here is pulling the saint out of the many waters, snatching him from the clutches of a harsh, hating enemy, and those that personally hate him, sustaining him in the midst of their oppression of him, bringing him into an open space where he's arming and strengthening him, and treating him well, and turning him back from the course that the enemy ultimately intended for him. And with this, we can note that it is not stated how long the saint had to endure all of this before God's aid. I'd imagine God's aiding him through all of this time, but the final triumph of this is a long ways down the road as he's going through this. And it doesn't either indicate to us how much of this was caused by the saint's, well, let's say, immaturity or his denial of the situation and the battle that was before him, or his lackadaisical response to the urgency of this, his underestimation of his foe, his misunderstanding of the tactics being employed against him, his shell shock. I put that down too. It doesn't say how stunned David was at the initial explosion and how, you know, the ringing in his ears. And when things happen in shell shock, it's almost with the adrenaline that's flowing through you, things are going in slow motion. You're disoriented, you know, that kind of thing. How much of this came upon David, these waters and these sorrows and everything, because of the shell shock of this, or even the friendly fire during our mutual shell shock. Nothing's indicated about that, but this could play into it. And there's also the idea that when God did pull him out, he pulled him out to a clearing where he could better survey the battle and then arm him to better fight the fight. So it's almost like this is coming in stages. Not once is it said that God safely slips the saint out the back door so that he gets to avoid the battle altogether. I wish it was so. Sorry to disappoint you here, but this doesn't suggest it. So let's continue now. The section 39 through 43. 39 says, "For thou hast girded me with strength." Girded means to belt or to bind me with strength. Strength means force, certainly, but it means an army of force. It means valor, certainly, but it means a valor of an army or valor of the bands of soldiers. That's what he's girded me with. That's the strength he's girded me with. Sounds like others and the valor and the force of others. Unto the battle. The battle there meaning the fight or the engagement or the war. Thou hast subdued, which means to bend their knee or to prostrate them under me, those that rose up against me. Now in 40, thou hast given me the necks of mine enemies. The neck is actually a picture of the nap of the neck or the back of the neck. As it's extended, as it's declining, as it's being bowed or prostrated, right? You see the back of their necks. He's given me the back of their necks, mine enemies, that is, that I might destroy them. That means completely or to wipe them out. Them that hate me. Now 43, thou hast delivered me from the strivings. Delivered means to slip out, but not slip out like I mentioned, slip out the back door. Slip out actually has more of the picture of when you're out in the barn and one of the cows is calving, and you're assisting in the birth of that. It's pulling the calf out of the mother's womb there, calving me. From the strivings, which mean a contest. It's either a contest personally or a contest legally. They're coming up against us. They're contesting us personally. They're contesting us legally. From the strivings of the people are not just individuals. This is more a picture of a congregated unit, right? So this is an association or assembly of people that are contesting us personally, contesting us legally. And thou hast made me the head of the heathen, a people whom I have not known shall serve me. Head means captain, as we might imagine, and heathen means the masses, the ungodly masses, or the foreign nations, those not familiar to the people of Israel. Note also now, now knowing these things and having this language before us, now we're looking at more of the end result after the saint has been brought through the experience of verses 16 through 20. There is an end to this, and there is a victory for us in the end. But it is entirely God's victory. Nothing is said about the saint having won this on his own. You know, only his willing participation with God in this. And as a result, we see God subduing the enemy. This is God subduing, not us or our Christian nation or, you know, we've gotten ourselves into trouble with inquisitions and stuff trying to do this ourselves. It's not us doing this. It's God subduing the enemy under the saint and putting him putting the saint in authority over them. Now note, along with this, this is the language, this is the picture drawn for us of a warrior king of Israel, by a warrior king of Israel, describing in this physical warlike terms, these terms of 1000 BC or beyond, that he and his nation would understand. He's picturing what has happened and this glorious day, picturing how to explain how God liveth. He's explaining it to his men and his nation in terms that they can understand. So he's using these warlike terms. Now that might be what's intended for this to mean to us in our current age. I put a question mark because it may be, but I believe that there is also a more relevant spiritual meaning found in Christ. Christ has become this for us, right? Found in Christ for our generation as well. And I have to caution all of us. People will misunderstand me or misrepresent what I'm saying. There will be some that will skip the deep spiritual responsibility inherent in this teaching. They will take the battle into their own hands and go straight to the violence. I certainly do not believe that Jesus advocated for violence and vigilante-style combat, so neither do I. Neither will I. This only goes to show the importance of getting this right, keeping it in the right perspective, keeping ourselves to the verse 21 through 23 list of things David had done to strengthen himself during these struggles, and to depend on God for the victory, not on our own tactics and our own resources. Now, there are three things in these two sections of verses that we just covered that the enemy is seen doing that the saint is requiring the Lord's help to overcome. The language of these descriptions may be suggesting a further look. Remember in 17, he's talking about strength. The language is indicating or suggesting this has to do with alertness. It could be suggesting that they are attempting to be overwhelmingly alert. Physically and alert courageously in a manner that the saint cannot match. In 18, we talked about preventing, and the language there giving us a suggestion of preceding and anticipating, which could suggest the concerted effort to be out ahead of the saint, to predict his potential moves, so as to be very much more oppressive to him. And then with the striving in verse 43, the language suggests a contest. Contesting might suggest that they would purposely engage us to constrain or occupy us physically and or legally. And note, this is explained in the language as being done by a congregated group of people, not just individuals. It could be said that the heart of the enemy and their tactics have not changed since the time of David and will not change any time foreseeable. What can be foreseen ahead that will be changing and is changing as we speak is the technology available to them that they will be using against the saint to get all this done. Which will bring me now to my previously stated growing concern. While I do try to keep up with the present technology and the future technologies currently being developed, there are those of you who follow this with a keener eye than I do. I think that those of you who do keep up with it would share my concern that it is all happening too quick and that the controls to keep it safe and non-oppressive are but superficial at best and non-existent at the bell curve average. The lines of ethic and morality and legality are being obliterated with increasing frequency. What our enemies already are able to do with technology presently, as far as their alertness, as far as their anticipating and preceding and predicting, as far as their contesting physically or contesting legally, is one thing that the saints of the past did not have to face. Well, they faced this in their own technologies, in their own formulations of government and such and everything. But this technology is expediting this and engaging this a whole lot differently. What they will be able to do shortly with their hatred for us, as far as their efforts towards this alertness and this anticipating and this predicting and contesting to us and our future generations, will be unimaginable. Christian, are you prepared for this? Here's a few of the things that concern me regarding this. In the past, we've always had the public square. People went there for their business. People went there for their consumables. People went there for their news and neighborly social engagement, for their entertainment, political discourse and conversations. Well, all of this recent technology, we have been sold on the idea that this is the perception that this is making it so it's one big worldwide public square. But what it actually has become to us is one mass movement towards the compartmentalization of us into multiple venues of group isolationism. And no one holds the public square anymore. Not like they used to. No one's at the public square anymore. And so no one holds the public square. Not even the media. As you see them trying to scramble to find a viable means of sustaining themselves. In the past, we had the colleges and universities. We practically invented them and brought them into public access. Even after they were taken over by secular humanists, we still were afforded by them debate and intellectual inquiry. Today's university sees us as Neanderthal, though, sees us as bigoted and racist and patriarchal and homophobic and intolerant, offensive, despicable. In the past technologies and things, this all would have been well and fine. However, now it is at these universities where these technologies are being thought of and developed. It is their scientific and social ethics and morality that we're having to trust. The pure academic sciences are verbally, unashamedly indicating that they no longer believe that even secular ethics to be of any concern to them. And in the past, amongst our Christian denominations, we think, well, you know, but there's still the church. In the past, our denominations, of course, there were many differences in doctrine, but never this postmodern doctrine questioning the sanctity of the very scriptures we've always based our doctrines upon. So if you think that the church today is going to respond to this next battle the way it once would have, you better think this over again. In the past, children were educated without the stickiness of federal government all over it. And a good many of them were churched, at least partially, at least with some experience of it. That is not so anymore. And I don't see much way of get it back quick enough. So again, Christian, are you prepared for this? I'd commented it earlier about my concerns about pre-tribulation rapture. Not the possible eventuality, but the fleeing mindset of it. Given the options of either fight or flight, the tendency for most of us is to choose flight. The opposition knows that tendency, and in their many schemes, they're counting on it. God knows that tendency also, and is counting on their tendency to count on our tendency as well. If that makes sense. It's important. You might have to read the note to understand what I just said there. To the opposition, the Christian appears to be a very easy target. As far as they're concerned, there is no God to step in and save us, or to strengthen us, or to empower us, or subdue them. Perhaps your faith currently is of the size that it doubts God's ability to see us through this upcoming battle as well. Perhaps you're making your preparations to fly off to safety when the conflict finally does come. I'm sorry to have to tell you that the conflict is already here. Part of the reason that it is going to get so much harder is because we haven't thought to raise up the bugle yet, or that no one has been alert enough to be listening for the bugle. In a sense, we have already been in a flight, and now it's time to turn back around, get over the shell shock, and get back into our ranks. The reason that all this may seem so scary to all of us is that we are still in the mind of what we ourselves can do about this, either to avoid all of this or what we ourselves could raise up and put up against such an enemy. As you see, it's still all about us, isn't it? Let me remind you, 1839, we started out this section. This is the title of this section. For thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle. Christian, are you ready to be strengthened for this?